My biggest gripe of 2015. I'm Jim DeBacchus on the left.
Bright future in 2016. I'm Representative McKay on the right.
Homeless services, I hope we get it solved in 2016. I'm Natalie Gochner in the political center. This is both sides of the aisle. But first, this news. I'm Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle, a special edition of the top political news stories in 2015. I represent the political center, and on the political right, Representative Dan McKay.
Good morning.
And on the political left, State Senator Jim DeBacchus.
Gotta think for a whole year, Natalie. That's tough.
I know. But there were a lot of news stories in 2015, and I'm just gonna just kick us off by talking about what were the top news stories from your point of view. I mean, we had mayoral election, we had voter modernization, we had same-sex marriage. Dan, what rises to the top for you of the top political news stories of the past year?
The top political news story is nothing got done on Medicaid, despite everybody seeming to put
so much
effort
Utah.
Onto it. You know what I mean? So, Healthy Utah, nothing coming out of the Healthy Utah conversation. I can't say that I'm upset about that. But anyways, I'd still think that's a big story.
Yeah. Jim, what would you put forward?
I would agree. But there's a bigger issue, I think, that affects virtually all 3 million Utahns, and that is wages are not keeping up. It is impossible now for a working person in the state of Utah to qualify to buy a home. You got to have both partners out there working, and this portends some very ugly things for our future. I noticed nationally, and I haven't seen the Utah figures, Natalie, you probably know, something weird happened in 2015. Turned out for the first time since anybody could remember, the middle class had less people than the rich and the poor. This is the big generation. It brings Donald Trump into the mix, and it creates so many economic and social issues. We've got to start facing the fact that we need our middle class back.
You know, Jim, I didn't expect you to go there, but it is interesting. There's something that we call personal income. It's just a measure of economic activity. And you look at the components of personal income, and the things that are growing are payments, like, you know, transfer payments, individuals, welfare, and interest, dividends, and rents. And what's losing is wage and salary income, which kind of makes Jim's point that we're seeing this haves and have-nots kind of taking place. That's a scary trend. So,
well, I think it creeped up on it, but I think there was a breaking point in 2015, and I can't put my finger on a specific moment or time, but I think that the political, social implications of that are terrific, and we need to address that issue.
Dan, one of the things I like about Jim is he always surprises you. So I'm thinking top political news stories 2015, he's going to go right to same-sex marriage, and he goes to wage growth.
Yeah.
Even gay people like a lot of money. I mean, you know, so they are.
Well, it's almost like it was a big story, and now we just moved on, you know. I don't know how everyone else feels.
Well, I think because it happened so early in the year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I remember I was on a Trax train, and it was really cold when I heard the news.
So here we are, yeah.
Yeah, well, it was February, right?
Yeah,
it was when everything happened. So I don't know. It's kind
of
old news to everybody.
What about a new mayor-elect, Biskupski? I mean, that's a pretty big political news story when a incumbent mayor that was quite popular before the election started, I mean, was polling quite well and just had a very quick decline.
Could that be a lesson for future executive offices? I mean, you know, you can poll big.
Do the 8 years and be done.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. Do you learn from this that 8 years is enough?
Well, I think that's part of it. But if you looked at that polling early on, you would have seen that Mayor Becker's support was quite broad but very thin.
Mm-hmm.
And so I suspect that the Biskupski people figured that out and were able to create these pockets where the strength wasn't there. I mean, let's give credit where credit is due. That Biskupski campaign was one of the great campaigns waged in Utah. They were terrific.
Just stood strong through the whole thing. Yeah, interesting. So in the past year, Jim, I'll start with you on this. Do you think that Utah trended more conservative, less conservative, or about the same?
It's an interesting question. And I suspect that we pretty much stayed static, which is we appear to be much more conservative than we are as a state because the delegates and, more important, candidates' fear of the delegates puts them in a position, I think, where they're very uncomfortable on a lot of issues. But politicians being politicians, they vote with the next election in mind rather than the broad governing principles. So I suspect that the electorate has pretty much stayed where they were, but the Trumpisms and that wing of the party may have moved even further right, except for Mike Lee, who's figured it out, and he is running to get more toward the middle so he can be reelected.
I'm asked the same question of you, Dan. Do you think more conservative, less conservative, about the same? Just statewide.
Jim makes a serious case for it, I just think, from a statewide perspective, because of the issues that were pushed outside of the downtown Salt Lake area. Mm-hmm. I think because of how much the frontal assault was on a lot of conservative issues, I think the state was pushed further to the right, I think. Gay marriage and some of those others.
I go to evidence on being more conservative in the sense that we traded out Jim Matheson for Mia Love. And so, you know, we used to have a Democrat in Congress, and we don't anymore.
Yeah, but how much of, I mean, look, I don't want to.
Are you going to make the argument that Jim Matheson was a Republican in disguise?
But remember, he didn't run.
I know it wasn't an election this year, but in terms of representation.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how this next election. I predict that will be an interesting news story for us to talk about in 2016.
Yeah. All right, we just have a few more minutes in this segment, but is there someone you guys would highlight who elevated their political stature in the past year?
I think two big winners there. I think Ben McAdams' numbers went through the roof. It's a tough job. And I think Spencer Cox, the lieutenant governor, who's come out of obscurity and darkness, nobody even knew who this virtual freshman was, to being a quite enthusiastic, knowledgeable, but policy kind of guy above and beyond what lieutenant governors traditionally are. So I think there's a couple of up-and-comers they added to their political capital, McAdams, Spencer Cox. Of course, McKay here, by being on the show, through the roof. We've done that. Those are some
of
the winners.
Someone you'd highlight who's
of course,
in the
Jackie
past
Biskupski,
year.
I should say.
That's not a bad way to look. I would say, and this, you know, you can have mixed feelings on this one way or the other, but I think Greg Hughes as the speaker, mm-hmm. you can argue it was good or bad, right, mm-hmm. depending on how you look at the issues that he chose to stand
up
on.
But you're right inside those caucuses. I mean, has he got the confidence of his people? And
the House trusts Greg Hughes. Mm-hmm. And the people trust their legislator. And so what I would say from a power base, Greg Hughes is probably one of the most influential people in the state.
So we're heading into 2016, and neither of you mentioned Governor Herbert. So let's just take a second. What happened to Governor Herbert's stature in the last year? Because he's you know, teeing up for an election year.
Lost.
Yeah.
And he stood.
Really? Lost stature.
He grabbed Medicaid expansion. He put it on.
Said, I'm going to get this done.
I'm going to get it done. I'm going to get it done this way. I'm going to get it done the next way. Nothing happened. And I'm hard-pressed to come up with a big, significant, visionary issue where the governor can say, yep, there, I did it. Whereas Greg, you know, say what you will about his ability to move that bunch of folks in the House. It's a squirrel pen in there. But Speaker Hughes puts his foot down and takes a stand and goes to battle, and that's what you want in a leader, I think.
He's the tip of the spear on so many issues, and that's why, while people say, you know, it's interesting because the Senate always elects, you know, leadership that tends to just kind of be mercurial mm-hmm. versus the House.
What does mercurial mean?
Just, you know, kind of follows
changes,
the temperature
yeah.
of the room, right?
You realize I'm in Senate leadership.
I know. But what I'll say is, sorry, in the Republican caucus.
Okay.
But in the Republican caucus, in the House, on the other hand, look at the last few speakers. They're always people who have this ability to grab the body and keep it in place.
I'm going to take issue with what Jim said about Governor Herbert. I mean, he's chair of the National Governors Association. It's a prestigious role. He spends a lot of time in the White House.
Nobody
President Obama.
Can. I think if you live long enough, you're automatically the chair of the National Governors
Association. I think it is.
You're listening to the Both Sides of the Aisle. I hope you'll stay tuned for our second segment.
Jim DeBacchus, proudly on the left.
Dan McKay on the right.
Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. This is a special edition of Both Sides of the Aisle, Year in Review 2015, and looking forward to the future.
You're really loud. I was just soft.
You sounded like, who's that guy on the kids show? Mr. Rogers.
Yeah. Where's your sweater today, Dan?
Exactly. I was just gentle.
I'm interested as we think back on the past year. Who in our political world, in public policy, who are the big winners and who are the biggest losers?
Let's go to the in the early part of the state. I would have said the earlier part of the year. I would have said the LDS Church was a big winner, and so was the Equality Utah.
That was a big moment.
It was a big moment, right? And then, unfortunately, because of policy changes, the church, unfortunately, it turned out to be a tougher situation, at least from a publicity perspective. But I don't think the leadership of the church feels that way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I do.
So there's one that cut both ways, at least in Dan's mind. And
look, they're not connected. That message for the state of Utah, for the LDS Church, for the LGBT community around the
Q, don't forget that.
World will be etched on there for a long, long, long time to come, and that's
well.
That's
Jim,
a good
I want to clarify for our listeners: they are different in the sense that one is a non-discrimination ordinance that protects people from discrimination in housing, employment, and the other dealt with how
religious
the LDS,
tenants within their own church.
So there's that.
It's different.
What about a big news story this year was the whole debate? It's funny how the year goes by and you kind of forget these things, but about the relocation of the state prison. Do you see any winners and losers there, guys?
Draper's a winner.
Yep, Draper's a big winner.
Draper and Bluffdale, big winners.
Yep.
Also, is the state a winner?
It remains to be seen. Let's see how it goes.
I think the verdict's out, but I think it leans towards winner for the state.
Yeah, that's where I am. I mean, I think that you have a Draper property that needs to be transitioned, and it's going to be great for our economy. And I think if they do the relocation right, in terms of prison reform, infrastructure, and
Saratoga Springs was a winner.
Yeah,
you know?
To avoid it.
Yeah, and Salt Lake was a loser. An interesting thing that's going to come up in this legislative session that involves the jail has to do with doing away with capital punishment, which might have been unthinkable a few years ago. But after what happened in Nebraska and other conservative states, we will save millions and millions and millions of dollars right now on how we design this prison. Because if you have a death row, it is very, very expensive. And when you include all the appeals and 20 years of waiting there, I think there's going to be a serious argument about it's time that Utah join the 34, 35 other states that doesn't have capital punishment.
But luckily we have the firing squad as an option still. Mm. So keep
that would be my biggest gripe of our state that we've ever had that. But we'll keep on
it's back.
Winners and losers.
We brought it back.
I know. As an alternative. Hey, how about the whole winners-losers versus fiscal conservatism and healthy Utah? How do you guys read that one?
Well, accepting Medicaid was the worst fiscal decision in the state history. I mean, we turned down.
So you see it as a win, and he sees it as a loss.
We turned down $747 million a year, and the outlier, they were going to spend $78 million. Just be a heartless Republican, corporate, lobbying kind of guy without any soul at all. You look at the numbers, somebody gives you a check for $747 million, and you got to give them back $78 million to turn that down fiscally. Those jobs, all that good is a preposterous fiscal decision, and the state is paying the price now.
Make your case, Dan.
I'm tired of you being sky is falling on this issue. It make it sound like it's, the end of the world because of one thing or another. The big winner was the state budget. I don't know that it's necessarily,
and by saying that, might mean education.
Yeah, you can look at education. You realize in the general fund this year, everybody's excited about how much money we have in the education fund, so we will be able to do things in education. But we are a $37 million shortfall in the general fund right now, and that's where Medicaid funding comes from.
With one of the strongest economies in the country.
With one of the strongest economies in the country, we're negative $37 million in ongoing revenue. So, Jim, I don't know where the $78 million comes from. And it's the same thing I said to the Governor Herbert, and it's I will say this over and over again. Show me the cuts to pay for it on a long-term sustainable basis, and I think we can get it done.
I got him. It's not hard at all.
Let's talk.
This is what we argued about most of 2015.
Yeah, you're right.
It is. Okay, I got a winner for you. The venerable Senator Hatch. He's a winner because he became, you know, what,
third, he has a
third in line for succession. He's
Secret Service agents around him. You know, they scurry around.
This is perfect.
Would that be Secret Service agent hell to be assigned to Orrin Hatch or to Mrs. Gerald Ford?
I mean, where so would you go? I've become so intrigued with this man. I've always liked him as a senator, and then I thought, well, you've been in there a long time, but now his length of service, I think, is a huge, huge asset to our state, and he's a winner for Utah.
Unless he uses it for evil.
Which I don't think he does. You guys are politicians. You just want to run for that office.
Yeah. Look, I'd much rather have the liberal Orrin Hatch than Mike Lee's Donald Trump crazyism. So in that sense, may he live forever.
That's why Jim likes him for 4 years and hates him for two. Yeah. Right? Because 2 years before you run for re-election and that re-election year, you've got to act like what you expect the voters to be. And then for 4 years, you get a complete free pass. You can do whatever you want. I'm not convinced they're Secret Service agents. I think they're physical therapists trying to keep him up. So, you know.
I would never say something that mean, Natalie.
Come
I just
on.
Want to go on the record. That healthy, vigorous 93-year-old man? I mean,
no.
I don't
No, hey, so, that's just it. If you have a conversation with him, he's not there.
So, wow. So we have other
He's more there than Donald Trump.
Okay. That I will give you. And I would take Orrin for president over Trump.
It used to be on both sides of the aisle. We spend a lot of time talking about Mark Shurtleff and Swallow. This year, we had a pretty sad situation with Justin Miller. I think that was a loser kind of situation.
You know, Justin was a bright star for the Democrats. Mm-hmm. He marched into Ogden, took that campaign organizational strategy and helped elect a Republican as the mayor of Ogden. Ben McAdams noticed that, hired him. He was responsible for running that McAdams campaign. Then he kind of elbowed his way a little bit and took over a House seat, managed to push somebody aside and got him to retire. Went in there, but it is pride and cockiness that goes before the fall. And I think that's what happened to Justin. He just got a little bit too cocky. And when he was caught taking the money out of Mayor McAdams' funds there, out of his PAC funds, the mayor went to him and said, put it back. You know, sign a note. Let's work this out. And Justin refused to do that and to keep it quiet. I mean, deals like that are made all the time everywhere. You know, if people get caught within a business or within something and they're allowed to put the money back in and everybody goes, well, I hope you've learned a lesson. Justin refused that deal and figured somehow he was going to be able to push Mayor McAdams around. And now who knows if he's going to jail or not. It's a sad story.
I give Representative King high marks for, you know, taking care of that situation as well as he did.
It's very awkward to say to somebody, don't come to our caucus meetings, member.
I don't know. I thought that was good.
It was messy.
I'm curious, Dan, how do you figure with Chief Burbank? Was he a winner or loser in 2015?
I think he's the biggest winner-loser this year because he lost the job but won in the public relations war versus Mayor Becker.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? I mean, he got the last jab, so to speak. And as we've seen on this show and others, who gets the last jab wins that day, I guess.
He got married and spent time in Italy on his honeymoon, and he's consulting
now, probably making
a lot more money than that. Can you imagine what a headache to have that many police officers?
That's the best way to lose a job I've ever heard of.
I'm saying winner.
Okay. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner, joined by Dan McKay and Jim DeBacchus. I want to try to transition now to some of your greatest hopes for 2016. I'm a big-time New Year's person. I love renewal, starting over, starting fresh. Curious, Jim, what are you hoping for in 2016? What do you see that we should all get motivated by?
You know, I see some light breaking in the arts in the state of Utah. They've been redefined. They've been kind of muscled into the arts are only important as they create economic development. Can you imagine? We're with Pops and with Beverly Sorensen, we're in the neighborhood of under $8 million for all of the school children in Utah from preschool to sixth grade. I mean, we're spending $14 million on a screwy one more lawsuit. I'm hoping, I'm believing, I'm optimistic that our legislators and our executive branch will begin to understand that all this STEM money doesn't matter a bit if we don't have youngsters that have a soul and have a love for the arts. That's what I. That's my big dream for 2016.
So you're advocating for STEAM.
I'm advocating for STEAM, and 1% of all of our education money goes for arts education, both on the K through 12 and in higher education.
You can disclose your conflict that you're an art dealer. And
yeah, you're right.
You know, hope Jimmy, those elementary you always surprise me. I mean, I know that would be important to you, but there's a lot of things. So I'm glad you've seen this. What's your greatest hope for 2016, Representative McAdams?
McKay. Yeah, no.
Because it deals with McAdams.
David O. McAdams. We all remember that LDS president. Yeah.
So that's funny. So I think our biggest gain in 2016 is going to be a continued sustained economy in Utah.
You're seeing it.
Yeah, I think 2016 is probably going to be our best year. As I talk to, you know, cause so much relies on construction in this state. Mm-hmm. We rise and fall with construction and starts and commercial and residential buildings. And the more and more I listen in the marketplace, the more ambitious builders are in the marketplace coming into 2016. This could be a really good year.
Interesting. I like that. So what I have on my list is a giant step forward on homeless services. And I'm saying that because of Gail Miller's leadership and Palmer DePaulis's and Mayor McAdams and what Mayor Becker's done.
Mayor McCain.
I know. And
Greg
shifting
Hughes.
To Biskupski. Greg Hughes, he can be a leader here.
He's very much into that.
Yeah.
And I'm surprised.
He loves
it. Yeah.
It's, and what I saw was after Medicaid expansion having all of its trauma, here's something where we could maybe bring together the power structure of the state to do something right. So I'm hopeful.
Hmm. I'm hopeful. I'm not sure there's a plan out there. I mean, I have yet to be convinced. It seems almost intractable.
Yeah. And then I'm interested, too. I would also – one other wish I'd throw out there is I'd like to see Trump get trumped. I really hope it happens.
I hope it's by Hillary. I agree with you.
Oh, brother. Yeah, that will be the interesting question in Utah. I because Trump polls really low here in Utah. Mm-hmm. He does really well nationally, but does really poorly here in Utah. And I think that's because of his aggressive style. He's very East Coast. And
yeah, that's not us.
That's not us, right? Mm-hmm. It's sad, and I've repeated this before, and I hope I don't get in trouble. But a lot of times we prefer that somebody be nice to us rather than be truthful.
Yeah.
And it'll be interesting to see how and if the Republican Party here in Utah can rally behind Donald Trump. I hope not.
Jim, it's time for us to hear the gripe of the year. And I know that's a big moment, but...
The gripe of the year for me is that too much of the public's business is done in smoke-filled back rooms in our state legislature, the opposite of the way that good government is done. There's a lot of old boy networks. There's a lot of $500 an hour consultants and PR firms and cut rate deals here and there that are done in those back rooms and in those caucuses where those votes are taken. I'm trying to not be political. It sounds I guess I'm not succeeding.
Yeah, I was going to say, I thought this was non-political.
But what do we need to get him to do is to say Coke-filled rooms.
Yeah. Diet Coke.
Diet Coke-filled rooms.
It is that's what needs to happen. Vote for Democrats across the board. We got to send a message. It's
that way
too
it really
modern,
can be
one
a smoke-filled
party.
Room.
I'm going to get this right. Representative McKay, gripe of the year.
Yeah, but can I go political? I mean, Jim did.
Did you say non-political?
No,
I
missed
that. Oh, okay. I thought our gripes were supposed to be non-political. That was like our gripe.
Yeah, well, that's my gripe that you're griping about my gripe.
There is no, rules.
Yeah, I want fewer. I'm bummed because there are fewer rooms where we can have these smoke-filled meetings, Jim. I don't know if you noticed. We have taken away a few meeting rooms at the Capitol. No, okay. I think my gripe of 2015, if I was to add it all up, is that we have a real traffic problem in and especially coming in and out of downtown. And if people do not figure out a way to get to work other ways than just one driver in their car, it's about to get a lot worse.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's my take, because we're building a big office building downtown. We've got more coming in. More jobs are coming to this locus of control downtown Salt Lake, and more people are driving, and we cannot build 20-lane freeways. We've seen it fail in China. I don't know if we can continue to that pace here. Use the train.
Yeah, my gripe of the year is not very creative, but it's what I feel so strongly because of what's happening on the national stage. But my gripe of the year is going to be Donald Trump. I just I want him to stay in business and stay in TV, but you're not
stay in golf.
You're not the person I want running the, you know, the free world.
Yeah.
Mm. Hope I can be successful.
I don't think any of us disagree. That's
I think
awesome.
We agree on all of our gripes. Right? I agree on Trump. I agree on traffic congestion. You guys agree that the Republicans in the Hill are too creepy? I mean, we're all there.
We're all there. So it's a really good time to wish our listening audience a very happy new year. Thank you for listening. The program is produced by Ross Chambliss. Thank you.